Welcome to the Back in the Day podcast with Metro Archives. Thanks for listening today. I'm Sarah Arntz, program coordinator for Metro Archives. Today's episode is part two of our special All-MPL series featuring Nashville Public Library staff members who have been with the institution for roughly 25 years, give or take a few. The series is part of our celebration of the Main Library's 25th anniversary. I'm joined by two more colleagues today, and rather than providing brief biographies for each as per usual, I'll let you each introduce yourselves and share how long that you've been with MPL.
Okay, I'm Susan Poulter. I'm currently a cataloging librarian, but I began with MPL as a children's librarian here at Maine. I've been here for 26 years.
Nice. Okay.
And my name is Andrew Thompson. I've been with the library now for 25 years. I started in the services for the deaf and hard of hearing, and I've been in children's at Englewood for almost 17 now.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, then. Well, welcome. So glad you guys are here with me today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to start us off with one of the hardest questions I think any library staff member is going to get. What is your favorite book or series, or it could be your current read?
Today, my favorite author is Jennifer Kruse, who writes lovely, breezy, perfect for summer books. Mm. My husband and I have decided that this is going to be the summer of Jennifer Kruse.
Nice.
And so that's what we're listening to.
Love it. Okay.
I'm going to go classic. I like Frankenstein.
Ooh.
And the one that she wrote before Shelley bullied her into revamping it. Because I'm always blown away with that she wrote it at 19 and her understanding of the human condition just kind of blows me away.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they don't write like that anymore, I don't think.
Kind of the 19-year-olds I know.
No, definitely not. Well, one I said the other day is my current read, East of Eden, but I'm going to throw an author in there and say Amor Towles because I've read one of his books and about ready to go down that rabbit hole, I think. He's a pretty good author. Well, tell me a little bit about your story of MPL, like what brought you here. For instance, I started in circulation here at Maine, worked my way up to adult services on the third floor. I was there a few years, and then archives I've been with for 10 years now. So you kind of mentioned already where you started, Susan, but if you want to provide more.
I worked for a little over a year at Vanderbilt when my husband and I moved to Nashville. Mm-hmm. And then I applied for the position in children's, got the job at the old Ben West building, and moved over here when this place opened. In children's, was there until, I think, 2008 is when I started down in cataloging.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And I was just finishing up at school at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and I had majored in educational sign language interpreting and was volunteering for Deaf Awareness Day at Dollywood. And there was a lady from the state who had brought some students from the Tennessee School for the Blind named Kathy Steger. And she said, oh, well, there's a position coming open at the public library in Nashville. You should apply. And I was like, yeah, all right. And so that's when I got here. And so I got here in August of 01. The main branch had been open a couple of months.
Okay. So you've been here since almost the beginning of this building, essentially. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And you say, again, you're at Englewood now, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. How long have you been there again?
Almost 17 years.
Wow. Very cool. And you love each of your departments pretty well, I would imagine. Been there long enough.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And branches. Yeah.
Love it.
Awesome. Well, were you, as I kind of already hinted at this, but were you here for the main library building opening? You started after, but were you here for the opening, Susan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember the opening day and anything?
I remember. I believe they commissioned a new composition that the symphony played for they premiered it. I remember watching from the windows and special collections and watching everything that was going on outside before we opened and marveling at that view straight up to the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. And we had a visitor that day in children's, a man who grew up here, who knew about Buttercup the Mouse, and who had been to the old Ben West on the last day to see Buttercup's house, to see if it was still there, and He came to see Buttercup's new house. Oh. It was so sweet. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness. I love that they brought that over from Ben West. That's
you know,
tradition.
I think, so important to have the original. The new one that they made was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't spark the imagination like the little cottage does.
Right.
You know, we'd point it out to kids as we were doing tours, and they'd get down and look to see if Buttercup was there. And so many kids saw Buttercup. One child did say she was bitten by a rat. No! But, yeah.
Do you know how that story started, Buttercup?
Tom Titchener is my understanding.
That makes sense.
I'm quite sure he made the original house.
Hmm.
And, yeah, it's...
Just a cute little tradition.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's charming.
Buttercup's house has by far and away always been my favorite part of NPL.
Oh, nice. Well, that was going to be one of my next questions, or one of my questions was, what's your favorite part of... It could be the main library, or it could be NPL... wide, so you know yours is Buttercup. Do you have one?
Oh, gosh. You know, when I was up in Children's, I did love the courtyard. It was especially in the cooler months.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a nice, quiet place to go sit and have lunch and read for a bit. It was just good.
Mm. And listen to the fountain.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very true. I do miss that. And we will... eventually get it back, I'm sure, but it's going to be a minute or two, I think.
Yeah.
Well, any other memories from opening day at Maine?
There was a lot of people, because I came to the opening day. That was the day I turned in my resume. And right, to an actual person. and HR, her name was Vicky. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was the first day, and there were so many people, and everybody's going around, and I was so impressed with how... they tried to make the main branch look like a building that had been downtown for a long time. And the elements of the, what is it, Watkins School of Design? What was where we are?
Watkins, on the eastern corner of the,
And like just how nuances of that. I think maybe part of the railing around the mezzanine maybe is like the elements of that or something that came directly from the Watson School.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. I mean, I know there's other elements in the building that are kind of an homage to something in Nashville history or the old buildings, but I didn't realize that. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've had people sometimes in our area that'll come up and they'll be like, this is such a beautiful building. How long has it been here? And when we say 20, 25 years, they're like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do love that classical look to it quite a bit.
And it's really so well maintained.
Mm-hmm.
It's always clean. It's kept fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It's glorious.
Mm-hmm. And even some of the changes that have been made over the 25 years to it, I think, suits it. I wouldn't say better than the original, but kind of continues to meet the needs that the library itself needs, I guess. Like the changes to the children's department and whatnot when they made that. And then adding us, of course, Archives wasn't originally here. And then... Yeah. We joined the party. Yeah.
And then was your question memories of or favorite parts of NPL in general or just from opening day?
Any part of NPL in general.
Yeah. Okay. Have to mention all of the exhibits that Beth Odell used to do on the mezzanine here. She was absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And every Christmas, I mean, the stuff that she did regularly, but the Christmas stuff was always so incredible because there were vintage photographs. She interspersed print copy from the newspapers and then would have display cases set up like you would see at the department stores that used to be downtown. And she had all this vintage stuff that, you know, just made it look real. And one afternoon I was sitting on a bench out there and there were these two older women looking at the stuff on the wall. And one woman said to the other, she's like, oh, I approved that ad when I worked at Kasten or Not.
I love when
so
that happens.
Seeing that kind of thing has always been very cool. Mm-hmm. Of seeing people from Nashville's past that come here and feel a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. She had quite the talent, Beth did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, at one point, there was an exhibit in the gallery, and this is 2006 or earlier. There was, I believe, a Chinese dissident poet And he was painting his poetry on the walls of the gallery. Hmm. I was working in children's one night and, you know, went down to see. And it was the most amazing, amazing thing to see. And that poetry then, you know, eventually was painted over. Mm-hmm. And so it's literally a part of the building. Hmm. I still get chills when I walk into the gallery because I can sense it. It's just so wonderful.
I wish there were any photographs or something of that somewhere, but I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there should be. There's definitely video of the performance in the auditorium.
Okay. Do you know roughly when that was?
I want to say we were still open nights, so it was probably 2006, 2004, okay. Right in that time frame.
Okay.
And I know Brian Hull and Mary Tanner Bailey were involved.
Hmm. Other MPL greats there.
Yeah.
Need to try to get them in on a podcast sometime. Actually, I do kind of want to do a wishing chair solo podcast because Pete was going to join us for this, but unfortunately his schedule's a little crazy. So I was like, well, do a wishing chair one and get you guys in and see if I can get Brian back in from wherever he's. I'm sure he's busy off working, doing something somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
That was one thing that years ago they had a videotape. Dating myself there. But it was a videotape, and it was about Tom Tischner. And it showed footage of children at the puppet shows from, like, maybe the 60s. And the children were just mesmerized completely. And that's so wonderful seeing children now when we see the puppet truck and how that's evolved and how it's come out to all of us now. And the looks on their, I think Mr. Tischner would be so proud, you know, of what they've done because they've really, really carried it forward and elevated it to a new level and still enchanting children just as much as it always did.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. And we might have that footage, maybe not the exact one you're thinking of, but we've got some of his footage digitized that's on our audiovisual Heritage Collection site on Vimeo. And I haven't watched all of it, but watched some of it. And it's got a very Mr. Rogers vibe to it, I think. I'll have to share that, actually, maybe on this podcast. Well, so talking about this building, I kind of want to take a jump back to Ben West a little bit. What are your thoughts on Ben West building? Or if you worked in it, I know you both didn't. What are your opinions on that building? If you want to share, you don't have to.
No. It had a charm, but... Oh my gosh, it was tiny.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. One of the nice things was, as I recall, on the first floor, they had great ceilings. Hmm. You know, nice high ceilings. I worked in circulation one day on a Saturday when the library had closed and we were getting set to, we were in the move and people had to be able to pick up their holds.
Hmm.
So I worked down there for one Saturday and... It was just, there was a sense of, and maybe it's because it was, you know, books were already on their way over, but there was just a great sense of space on the first floor, which we didn't have up in children's.
Ah, I see.
And even though I never worked there, I always had a bone to pick with the Ben West building because I learned that it was the site of the original downtown branch.
It was, yeah.
When that picture of the Carnegie branch, it was such a beautiful place. And what more perfect building to have the archives in?
Yeah, for
But unfortunately, you know, city leadership didn't really
value
it.
Apparently, when we moved to Maine, that building was eyed for potentially being our next home, but it didn't. Which, in a way, it would have been great. We probably would have outgrew it fast, because as of right now, we're split between three buildings with the amount of collections we have.
Sure.
Plus, I don't know that it would have been able to be... We would have to have, like, retrofitted it in some capacity to be environmentally safe and everything. However, you're still right. I think it would be nice to be in a historic building like that, but... I wonder if they let people visit it, because I hear it's an architecture firm now.
Yeah.
I would love to see it, because I never had the luxury. Even though I grew up in Nashville, I never went to that building. So,
Why would you go downtown when you have, you know?
Yeah. But doing the research, I mentioned this in other podcasts, doing the research on this building and previous buildings, I think it's funny that that building was built to have levels added to it. They planned because they knew the library was going to grow because it just always was. But I guess they went from, what, I think it's 65,000 square feet to this building that is, what, 300,000 square feet?
Like
so
that.
I'm not so sure another level was going to help that assistance. They were like, eh, we'll just try elsewhere, I think. So, but it would be kind of cool to see. I like the mid-century modern look to it. I think it's kind of unique. Okay, well, you already answered my question about what's your favorite part of the library. What do you think is a behind-the-scenes thing that the library does that would be a unique thing for patrons to see? I know it's a tough one.
One of the people who used to work here for years, who was just one of the backbones of behind-the-scenes, was Georgia Varble.
Oh, Georgia, yes.
And Georgia, man, the amount of logistics that she went through and knew to make just every event that happened here look seamless. Everything was on point with Georgia. She was so dedicated. And I think people would be surprised at the amount of effort that goes into just something in the conference center. You know, when you think about, you know, the tables and the chairs and the food and the AV and, you know, da 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 da. And Georgia was just one of those NPL jewels that really helped make it all happen. So I think people would be interested to see how much goes into just one event.
That's a very good point. Yeah, for sure. Your thoughts?
I think people don't realize how many people are involved in getting a book from the time you request that the library purchase something to getting it into your hands. It's amazing.
That's a lot of people.
I mean, the acquisitions librarians, the staff who place the orders, the receivers, the catalogers, the barcoders, the delivery folks who will deliver it to your library, the staff who have to put it on the shelf. It takes a couple of people. And it's kind of fascinating.
That is exactly what I was thinking after we did this podcast the other day. I was like, I wonder what my answer would be. And that was the exact answer I had. I'm like, I think people would be fascinated to see even like the physical part of it or just hearing how many steps does it take to get to being hold.
Someone from Wishing Chair did a video that I think is...
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That shows the process, taking a book through it all.
That's very clever. So, and doing it in their own style.
When you think of that amount of process and you attach it to each item that is in our library system.
Which is millions of items.
Millions of items.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Right. Or even the process of what books are chosen to be purchased. I know some of them come in as recommendations, but just that process alone of figuring out what to be ordered, it's not an easy job at all.
Right. I mean, how do you know that Yesteryear is going to have 3 million holds on it?
Exactly.
It's, yeah.
Agreed. Very much so.
And what formats do we need it in?
Yep.
Yeah. And what formats can we get it in?
And how complicated that's become, too, with ebooks and e-materials.
It's,
not easy at all. But yeah. Well, I will give an answer because I don't know if I gave one. I may have just copped out and said Metro Archives behind the scenes and use my own. But I would say Forest Team. These guys, every podcast I do, they're the major work behind getting all of this ready and recorded and edited and stuff. So seeing the behind the scenes of every recorded content that's put out there and whatnot, that we have the multiple podcasts and whatnot. I think that's all fascinating for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Big props to them. Yes, props to you guys.
Just.
All right. Well, so what's something that the library used to do manually that would surprise, you think, patrons or new staff? And card catalog is my answer. You can go with that one.
The transition was made in like 94 to an electronic catalog.
Did not know that.
So, yeah, that was fairly early. But yeah, the cards had to be filed. They had to be typed up at one point, long ago. And then you'd have to go upstairs to the card catalog and literally file each card. That thankfully predates me. But it was so much work. And it's why, it's one of the reasons that technical services staff often gets to work odd hours.
Good to know.
Yes. Yes. Get in real early, get off early.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, for sure. Beats the traffic, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
When I started working for the services for the deaf and hard of hearing, we would ship our materials to any resident of the state. So that went to every county in Tennessee.
Wow.
And so people would, you know, make the requests. We'd get the paging slips. Paging slips.
Paging slips. There
There's
you go.
An old one. But that would, you know, print out on the thing. And so we'd pull it all, pack it all, ship it all. And then with return, we'd get it all back. And it was shipped all over the state.
Wow. So they don't do that in their department anymore?
Oh, I'm not sure.
That was, I think that was when it was part of the state library. And now that it's strictly NPL.
It's a little different. I see. I gotcha. Mm. Wow. I can't even imagine what that would intake, but... I mean, in a way, that's kind of what we do. Well, not definitely not to that capacity, but we technically serve nationwide, international, with whenever people request marriages, which is like our biggest thing that's requested. I sent one to Canada a couple months ago, a lady that lived up there, because, I mean, you can get married here, but of course you may not. There's so many people that don't live in Nashville anymore. So I think one of my other questions I was going to ask was, what is something we do that would surprise people? And it's the fact that the services we offer can be, it's not just a book, it's there's so many more.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is another service or something that you think we do that would surprise patrons?
I wonder how many phone calls they get up in reference with, you know, the questions that are not just looking for hours or real quick and easy information, but takes a bit of digging.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten some emails like that down in cataloging, and I have to respond to one that's been sitting there for too long now. So, but yeah, it's anyone in the building may get your question and get to dive into it, sink their teeth into it.
Right. I dare say a lot of books or something have been written sometimes from the start of patron requests.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be my guess. Yeah. Any thoughts, Andrew? Something else we provide?
Oh, I think people would be surprised at the amount of outreach that we do, because for children's, you know, all of us have the cluster of schools that are right around us, and we all go out to all of those. And so the amount of effort that's put into extending library services for people who might not be able to make it in.
Yeah.
I think people would be surprised at how many people we serve. Like, Susan and I both remember when the puppet truck got instituted.
Oh, yeah.
And that was huge.
Do you know when that was, roughly?
Oh, 05?
Was it that early?
Okay.
Seems like I was still here.
I do not know. I have no idea.
I think it was around when I started, and I started 2011. Oh. So
maybe around then.
Sounds familiar.
But that was huge. Because all of a sudden, you know, all of the puppet stuff was all over the county.
Yeah.
And it took that inspiration of the library out to tens of thousands of children. And heaven knows, probably hundreds of thousands by now.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know how far. Do they just do Davidson County, or do they branch out further than that? I would imagine it's just Davidson County.
I think it's just Davidson County.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think I've only had the luxury of watching one puppet show since I'm here. I'm so sad to admit
that. Oh, you're missing out.
I know.
Missing out. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I actually had this idea to talk to Brett about eventually, is to maybe talk to them about having a show written that kind of tells the story of, not necessarily Metro Archives, but maybe like a history of Nashville. I don't think they have one of those that we know of.
No.
So I thought it'd be kind of cute if we could ever talk them into doing that. Because one thing we struggle with a little bit in archives is, like, we can give a tour to anybody that comes in to tell us what we do. But then trying to translate that to kids or people who are younger, I struggle with that so much.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you get a lot of blank looks.
You do.
Why do I need to know this?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. Mm-hmm. But making archives come alive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then just finding a way to even connect to the kids about the history. I think that's what the puppet shows do so well, of telling a story and breaking it down to where they understand it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Well, thinking broadly across roles, what's one memorable patron, staff, or work-related experience that has stuck with you over the years? And I'll share the one I did the other day to kind of give you an example. When I used to work in adult reference several years ago, I remember a patron came up and asked me, what's the most important book to humanity that you have here? And it was a very, like, existential question. Wow. I was like, I think I referred him to religion or something like that. But I was like, oh, that's such a subjective question. I don't know. But obviously I remember it because I've thought about it after.
Could have been a cookbook.
It could have, you know?
Yeah. Depending on your mood at the time.
That's right.
The joy of cooking.
Well, one thing I remember, I was doing a display in the lobby about Thomas Scott Marr, who was the deaf architect who designed the post office, which is the Frist, and the War Memorial Building and stuff around. And so I went to the archives over on Elm Hill, and Ken Feith was the archivist, to get some blueprints of the War Memorial Building for part of the display. So we're walking around. He's, you know, I'm just kind of looking at stuff. And I looked over, and there was this stack of these wide leather belts, long leather belts. And I was like, oh, what are those? And he said, oh, one time this old man came in with those, and he said, yeah, when I was a kid, I worked at the Worthen Bag Building, which is over there on Metro Center, not far from the North Branch. And apparently, all of the sewing machines that made those burlap bags never shut off, and they were all connected to a large machine in the lower floor that ran 24/7.
Oh, wow.
And so this old man came in. He was like, oh, yeah, when I was 9 years old, I was the belt changer at Worthen Bag. And he said you had to line, when a belt broke, you'd have to line it up to this machine that didn't turn off, take a ride, a steel ride, and run the belt down the ride. And when it caught, snatch the ride back. And I just had these visions of a 9-year-old's arm just getting torn from their body,
right?
You know?
I'm like, that sounds dangerous.
And of course, you
perfect
know.
Perfect job for a 9-year-old.
Absolutely.
And no labor laws, no child laws. Oh. Be like, oh, well, you know.
I'll be all right.
Yeah, you're good.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
The community stories that we get at the library are infinite.
That is so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that you mentioned, I'm like, I don't think I've seen the belts. I know we've got the Worthen Bag factory, like the collection, but now I'm curious. I do miss Ken quite a bit. He was always good, like, had some of the stories he'd come up with the things that are donated, because we come across some things that were like, why, this isn't government related, Ken, why do we have this up here? Well, and it would start with, this person brought this in, as you do.
I was always so impressed, like the people. Some of the people that I've met over the years that had so much knowledge in their head, it just blew me away. Ken Feith was one of those people. Mm-hmm. Carol Kaplan was one of those people. Mm-hmm. She was in the Nashville room, and she just knew everything. I mean, you could see it. You could ask her anything, and she would know about it. And Ken was that way, too. So I've always been really impressed by, you know, the people that NPL has staffed. You know, they've just offered so much to everybody, and so willingly.
Right.
So hey, Ken would love it if you asked him, you know, about a story or, you know, a fact or anything. Mm-hmm. Carol was the same way.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, every now and then you could still get stuff out of him, too, that's like, oh, yeah. Just sit there and let him talk as long as he can, possibly. This is true. The people that work here are very unique, right? Bring their own kind of experiences to their positions.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things for me, I do the Family Folktales podcast. I've been doing that now for, I think it started in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And every once in a while I start thinking, should I keep doing this? Because there's no feedback.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then I get a letter from someone in New Zealand or Pakistan saying it makes a difference.
Hmm.
And it's uplifting. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that I then stash away and...
Mm-hmm.
And...
Gives you the reminder to keep going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's... Library service does not end at the walls.
That's very true.
It goes who knows where.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the impact of the library is worldwide.
That is very true. Yep. Every different library, too, with their own services. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely mm-hmm. worldwide.
Support your local library.
Yep. Well, what's a piece of institutional knowledge that you've carried through different eras of working here? That's a tough one, too. I saved the best for last.
Oh, dear.
Institutional knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's always made me very proud to work at the library is that our job and our goal is to provide the full range of information for anyone who wants to access it.
Hmm. Well said. I know.
Oh, yay. I have to follow that now.
I could say ditto.
I'm working a lot right now with juvenile series. And so in the back of my mind constantly is, what are the things that go into how we define a series of books. And, you know, in children's, it's going to be different than in adults because we have separate shelving. You know, it's typically short. It's typically, there's going to be a number on the spine. Typically, it's more than three. Typically, they come out multiple times a year. Harry Potter is a series, but it doesn't go on the series shelves. Also, there is no... Harry Potter was always intended as a seven-book set.
Okay.
And so that it had a finite, a definite ending point planned, and that takes it away from series.
Okay.
A lot of the series books, you can read in any order you want, whatever is on the shelf. This book is not dependent on the 35 that came before it. You can read a Nancy Drew from anywhere in the series. Or a Hardy Boys.
It's not continuous kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or consecutive. Yeah. Okay. I did not know that. Learned something new here. Nice.
And that's just, I mean, and how the things we use to define a series keeps changing. So,
mm-hmm.
you know.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. That's a good answer, too. Perfect. I'm debating whether to throw one of my bonus questions before my last one. So let me see which one I want to
do. Do it.
Yeah, I'm seeing which one sounds different than something I've already asked. If the main library could talk, what story would it tell from its first 25 years? I know.
We don't ban books.
There you go.
Kyle Cook said the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There you go. Every book has its reader, and every reader has... We should have something here for everyone. Mm-hmm. And if we don't...
It's shocking.
It's... Yeah. If we don't have something... We're not saying we're going to have every book you want to read. But your viewpoint should be represented in some way in the system. Doesn't mean we have to like it.
That's
we
true.
Just have to get it on the shelf and make it available.
Perfect. We're the house of knowledge and you should be able to find it here.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then I'm going to leave us to our last question, which is also hard, but I know you guys got it. You've nailed all the other ones perfectly. So looking ahead now, where do you see MPL in 25 years?
Don't let them put a chip in you.
I
see libraries expanding our educational role and maybe branching out to schools, you know, in a different way. Through schools and also as community space. Because, you know, lots of the newer branches have that mobile shelving. And so that's an element of libraries that did not used to be. You know, the shelves were always very fixed. And now you can morph a library branch into a space that can accommodate, you know, different things, different designs, you know, different patterns. And it's a lot more, mobile's not the word.
Flexible.
Flexible. Mm. It's a lot more flexible than it used to be.
Yeah.
Because those oak shelves were where those oak shelves were. Mm-hmm. You know, and
no budging.
And no budging at all. Yeah. And now there's more fluidity to the library. So I would see that, you know, increasing as the years went on.
Yeah.
And in a similar vein, I can see more tiny branches, more itty bitty neighborhood branches. So that you don't have to get in the car and drive 5 miles or whatever. Mm. You can walk to that neighborhood branch and find what you need or pick up your holds. And it's just more integrated into the daily life of the community. It could be a joint school public library branch.
Ooh, I like that idea.
You know? There are so many things that could be done.
Nice.
So
maybe this is the catalyst. This is where it starts.
And I see that the library will continue to be a beacon of community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And connection to your community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The thing I kind of mentioned the other day, too, and I will again, was the fact that just having researched the library system and seeing what it started as, which was you had to pay back in the day to use a library, not this like out-of-county fee. There was a fee for every library card. And then it morphed, like you say. It's adapted to what the community needs. It's provided added services that it started as just a place to get a book. Well, we are far from just books. So far from just books. So I think that's right. If anything, it's an institution that's learned how to adapt to whatever the patrons need. So.
Yeah.
There's no reason to think it won't continue to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Well, any other final thoughts, memories, or inspirations? Or you can end with another book rec, whatever you'd like.
Let me think. You know, when I started here, we have the annex. It's in a separate space. It's not available to the public. And I remembered one of the first chapter books that I remember reading as a child was called The Gruesome Green Witch.
Ooh.
Don't ask me who wrote it. I don't know. But it was printed in green. Mm-hmm. It was printed in the early 70s, or published rather in the early 70s. And I was shocked to find that we had it. And it was down in the annex. And I went down there and I checked that book out. And I remembered some of it pretty clearly. You know, they found this magical portal where they could do their homework and the numbers were swirling around their heads and they'd stick up a pencil and it would go right down onto the page. You know, it was... But there was also this whole weird anti-war thing.
Whoa.
One of the characters had an older brother who I think he had just gotten his draft notice. Uh-huh. It was so bizarre that I had no memory of that. And I read that 15 times.
Oh, wow.
So.
All right. And we still have it in the system?
We no longer have it in the system.
Yeah. ILL.
Exactly. Interlibrary loan is your friend for the obscure. But it was really wonderful for me to be able to make that connection back to my earliest library memories all these years later. And it was magical. That's nice. What libraries are. They're about making magic.
That's a good way to put it, for sure.
That's one thing I really like about the library experiences, like in terms of working with children. One of my favorite stories that's happened years ago, at the end of my story times, I would give the children a little Dixie cup with about a half inch of goldfish crackers, you know, in the bottom. So one day there was a little one named Lily, and I had given her cup and was walking around the room. And as I passed back by, I heard her grandmother say, oh, you dumped him on the floor. We'll have to scoop him up and throw him in the trash. You know, and so then I finished walking around and I came back around and Lily's standing there with her cup and she's looking down and she's just like, and her grandmother said, I bet if you ask Mr. Andrew really sweetly, he'll give you some more goldfish. And so she turned around. She looked up just to see where I was and then looked back down and came up to me. And in this itty bitty voice, she's like, can I have some more goldfish, please? And I was like, sure, honey, I'll give you more goldfish. And I took her Dixie cup and there was a little tear in the bottom of the Dixie cup.
Oh, goodness.
And so talk about magic library moments. I mean, you can't. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen electronically.
No, it does not.
That is our humanity right there in the bottom of a Dixie cup. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that you can't substitute.
Yeah, you cannot. My goodness. I can't end this any better than that. So I'll say thank you guys for listening and thank you guys for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Support your local library.